I am very excited about today's guest, Colleen Pender, the head of technology at NAB. Now, Colleen was actually a panelist at one of our recent Sisterhood socials. And what she said at the event, I thought, I have to have her on the podcast to get her full story. So Colleen has been with NAB for 14 years, and she has progressed and taken those leaps in her career to get to where she is today. And she breaks it all down for us, the lessons that she's learned along the way, how she's got there, mentorship, sponsors within the business, and her advice for you if you want to step up, get that promotion, and live up to your true potential. We talk about the power of learning, the importance of building up your knowledge. We talk about how you can build your confidence, the real skills of the future. And it's not just all linked to AI. I promise there's some real valuable takeaways in today's episode. So lean in. There is a lot to learn from Colleen. She's exceptional. She's been in technology for a long, long time now. And I got so much from this episode today. So enjoy. And now over to Colleen. Colleen, welcome to the Career Confidence Podcast today. I am delighted to have you on. You obviously spoke at one of our Sisterhood socials earlier on in the year, and the feedback from that event, for some of the things that you said, your story, everyone was like, I want to know more about Colleen's journey. I want to hear from Colleen. So I'm really grateful that we're doing this today, because you've got so much to offer the audience. So for those that don't know who you are, weren't at the recent Sisterhood social, can you give a bit of an introduction to who is Colleen? So I'm going to pause there and over to you.
Thanks, Georgie. Hi, everyone. So Colleen Pender, I'm currently head of technology at National Australia Bank. I've been at NAB for about 14 years now, which feels like it's just flown by, in lots of different tech roles. And the one that I'm on at the moment is it's a big migration project. So lots of people, lots of stakeholders, and some really tight deadlines.
I can imagine. So I would love to go back to the start of your journey, Colleen, because 14 years at NAB, that is quite the stint, but you haven't just stepped into the head of technology role. So can you give us an insight into how you've made this happen, even reflecting before your journey with NAB? Like, how did you get into tech? What inspired you to get into tech? Like, I would love to hear a bit about your back journey.
Yeah, sure. So tech was probably started back in high school. So I was always interested in programming, and it was very logical to me. So we did programming subjects at school and then into university as my undergrad. And there was something very, very logical and very straightforward about writing code that appealed to me. So my first couple of jobs was as a programmer, and then I sort of moved into business analyst type roles and then into project management. Now, those transitions sort of just evolved, really. So opportunities came up, and I find myself I'm quite organized anyway. So there was a natural sway to perhaps more of those analytical and project management type roles. But then I felt in order to get into more experienced project management and other type of management roles, I felt I needed to go back and do some more study. So I went back and did two masters. I did a master's of information systems management and then a master's of business administration. And for me, that was, yes, it was about the knowledge and having that knowledge base, but it was also about the confidence so that I could feel that I was deserving of the role and trying to perhaps get away of some of that imposter feeling that I had and is also, you know, quite common in a lot of other both women and men that I talk to as they move up through their career. So I think from there, and then I went into NAB sometime after that, I think that transition into various roles came down to the network that I had. So working with different people, understanding what they were looking for, and building my brand around what I was good at, what my skill set was. And then I think also just a lot of hard work. So making sure that the role that I was doing it to the best of my ability. And I was being honest with myself, being transparent with what I was able to achieve, and kept moving forward that way. So it kind of felt more of a evolving into these roles as opposed to having a sort of a lot more structural or timing to say, right, you know, I'm going to do this for 18 months and then I'm going to do that and then I'm going to do something else. So it was more about having that network, building up my skills, and then sort of finding that opportunity that suited when I was ready to move.
Amazing. You said something really interesting as well at the start when you were talking about education and how that gave you the confidence, because I guess you became very competent with your skills and experience. And look, how important do you think that whole sort of like working on yourself, education, knowledge is when, especially when we want to step up into these senior level roles, like just having those solid foundations, like thinking about some of the women that listen to this podcast right now and, you know, they're sort of at the start of their career, like how important is it to get those foundations right from day one?
Yeah, look, I think it's really important, and it's been a philosophy for me for my whole working career. So, you know, I've always focused on making sure I had the knowledge and the skill set, and if I didn't have it or couldn't get it through my employer at that time, then I would go and source that out myself through extra learning, through different courses, etc. So I think it's really important to have that base. Like I said, for me, that was helping to build the confidence. And then, you know, you still need the networking, right? So it's very important to have all those and to be knowledgeable and qualified, etc. But if you're not putting it out there as to what you can offer and how you can offer and what problems you can solve for other people, then it's probably not going to give you the benefit that you hoped. And I think when I first completed my MBA, I just thought magic was going to happen. So, you know, the next day it would be a case of, oh, well, I've got a piece of paper now. I'll be finding jobs everywhere. But it's important, but it's also coupled with what is the problem that you can solve for who, and making sure that they can see the value that you can bring.
Mm-hmm. This is really powerful, because I do think that we probably live in a society at the moment where people are sort of job hopping quite a lot, and they're sort of like chasing maybe the salaries, the golden carrot, thinking, oh, it's going to be better over there. But actually what I'm sort of hearing from you, what you've done in your career, you've got the knowledge, you've really built that, and then you've stayed in an organization, networked, been visible, put your hand up, been a problem solver, and that's really got you to where you are today. So again, I want to sort of talk about now this whole networking piece, because this comes up all the time, Colleen, especially when I speak to these C-suite women, CTOs, heads of techs. They've all got these fantastic networks of sponsors, mentors, like just people around them that have helped them to get to where they are. So what advice would you have to somebody listening to this right now that maybe is a bit more like introverted, maybe really struggles to speak up, maybe struggles with their communication in a business? How have you gone about networking, and how have you gone about being really visible in NAB and in the organizations that you've worked for?
Yeah, sure. So it's a great question, because I'm naturally more introverted myself anyway. And when I started down that networking journey, it was always a case of, oh, I don't want to attend these events. What am I going to talk about? But then I sort of spoke to, you know, people that did it well and got some tips. And I think for me, a couple of the tips that were really helpful is have a look at someone you admire, or someone that's got a skill or an approach that you're aiming towards, and set up a time with that person. I think a lot of people enjoy when someone reaches out to them and say, oh, I really like how you do this. Can I set up a time with you to get some tips or get some insight? I've done that a few times in my career and no one's ever said no. And when people do the same for me, it gives me a good feeling that someone's recognised something that I've done. So I think that's the first thing is identify someone with that trait that you're after. Set up some time to have a conversation about it. And I think part of that's important to set a goal for that conversation. I think it can be very daunting just going into a meeting with someone more senior and thinking, oh, I'm just here to network. And that's it. It's about looking at a specific thing that you want to talk about, that you want to focus on, and then having a specific conversation about that. And I think you do that a few more times and you start building up that network of people that you can go to when you need advice or support on something, as well as those individuals realizing that you're after something more, that you're trying to improve yourself. And that goes a long way in how you're perceived and the brand of you as a person.
Mm-hmm. You said something really interesting then. You mentioned the words goals, and I think this is really linked closely to clarity. And we speak about this a lot on this podcast, about how clarity actually builds confidence, because when you're clear on where you want to go and you've got that roadmap and that timeline, you're then going to reach out to the right people, because I'm a big believer of success leaves clues. So in your organization or even outside of your organization, if you want to be, say, the GM of technology in a big organization, like, reach out to the people that are where you want to be. And they don't even need to be, they could be a few steps ahead of you. So how did you sort of go about then, Colleen? Like, did you sort of sit down and sort of like maybe go, this is where I want to achieve. Okay, who around me has got the skills, the traits, the characteristics, who's where I want to be? Like, how did that piece look? And then how did you go about reaching out to these people? Did you send an email? Did you tap them on the shoulder? Because I want to get granular, because women will be listening to this and being like, okay, that's amazing. But what are the sort of the first steps that Colleen took to start making this happen?
Yeah, sure. So I wouldn't say that it all became clear at the start. I think it was more of a process that evolved. And I think one that came to mind for me was a program director that I'd worked with a number of years ago. And he was very charismatic. You knew he was on the floor. He was very engaging. And he was what I thought you needed to be a program director, because I just thought he was awesome in how he did it. And so I wanted to do that role, and I thought, okay, I'm going to reach out to him and talk to him about what did that look like for him, and get some tips and techniques. So I sort of broke it down and focused on that. And then I think later on in my journey, there was other things that I wanted to focus on, and that was around public speaking. And so I looked at people that could present really well, really clearly, and I thought, yeah, that's what I want to be good at as well. And then so, you know, I looked at people that did it well, and I also did a course on it, and then practiced it lots and lots and lots of times. So it wasn't for me about identifying, you know, 10 things or even 5 things, if I'm honest, in one go. It was sort of looking at people around me, the roles that I wanted to have, and think, yeah, I really like how they command a room, or I really like how they build respect with their team. Let me break that down and focus on that. And I think there's lots of different ways that, you know, you can do it. I know colleagues that will come up with their 2-year plan, their 5-year plan, and work through it that way. I don't think there's a right or a wrong way. It just needs to work for you and help take you to where you want to go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really powerful stuff. And I think we all need to practice a bit of self-awareness. I think this is really, really important, because we've all got gaps and we've all got strengths. And I'd love to sort of get your thoughts on this, because we're talking a lot in, especially in tech, about the future of tech and the skills that we're going to need, like prompt engineering, AI, like all of this stuff. But what's not being discussed enough, in my personal thoughts and opinion, is all the softer skills. And I'm air quoting here, because these are actually the human skills that I think are going to be really noticeable as we shift into a more sort of like artificial intelligence world, robotics. These human skills, and you mentioned one right there, public speaking. Oh, I used to get, and I've shared this before, so nervous, so anxious. I could barely stand up in front of a board and say my name without sweating and seeing spots. I've really had to work on that. I've really had to sort of like put myself out of my comfort zone, speak on panels, speak at events. And I did Toastmasters for 2 years to really help me overcome that. So what are the more, I want to go on to like the future tech and where you sort of foresee that going. But in terms of those more soft skills, aka critical skills, how important are they to focus on in our careers right now?
Oh, look, 100%. I think when I interview for people, I sort of expect to some extent that they've got the, you know, they've got the education, they've got the either the project management or the development, you know, whatever that background is, that's sort of a, you know, a given. But it's how do they present information? How do they communicate? How do they manage difficult stakeholders, and how do they deal with change? And I think that's coming up quite a bit for me at the moment. As I said at the start, I'm on a large program, complex, you know, lots of challenges. You know, sometimes there's a bit of a pivot between the direction and how do you cope with that? So I think, when I'm looking for people, it's those sorts of traits that, I really want to flesh out from the individual to see, you know, are they going to be able to cope with that change? Are they able to pivot from one focus to another, which sometimes, unfortunately, is the reality of these sort of programs? Can they communicate what they're working on, and can they get those tricky stakeholders across the line? And I'm not just sort of talking about, you know, sort of project managers. Obviously, clearly they need those skills as well. But, you know, developers, testers, anyone sort of in that whole spectrum needs to be able to communicate and talk about the value out of what they're doing. It's great that they can develop a program and have amazing skills in that space, but we're sort of moving into this era of, that's one part of it, yes, but how are you showcasing your value, and how are you identifying what you've done to make that attractive to either your customer or to your stakeholder group?
I'm so pleased we're talking about this, because, and I'm so glad we're talking about when you interview people as well and what you look for when hiring. This generally happened to me a couple of weeks ago. I was on a briefing call with a hiring manager, and he said to me, Georgie, when it comes to those technical skills, get me someone who's about a 6. When it comes to softer skills, emotional intelligence, adaptability, resilience, I need an 8 or 9. He's like, I need somebody who's going to come in, be able to deal with your stakeholders, deal with the changes, a fast-paced project. How are they going to cope with shifting priorities? How are they going to lead the team? Like, that was what they said to me. And I thought, wow, this is really interesting. He's not just sort of like, tick, 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 you hit all those technical boxes. They need somebody with those softer skills. So how I'm curious, like, Colleen, how do you sort of test for that when it comes to like hiring in your team? Like, what are some sort of like red flags? And what are some things where you go, yeah, that person's, they've got it?
Yeah. So I usually had the basic question, which is, what are your strengths and what are your weaknesses? And I don't so much as care as to what the answer is, but in how they respond to it. So for me, you know, you might get strengths. They might say, you know, I'm a great public speaker. I'm a really good problem solver. You know, fine, whatever that is. And then you get to weaknesses, and they might say, I don't have any weaknesses. And I think, okay, so you're either, you know, Superman or Superwoman, But unlike the rest of us, we've all got our weaknesses. So things like that sort of are a bit of a red flag to me, because I'm thinking, well, they're either not being completely honest, or they're not self-aware to know where their opportunities of improvement are. And thirdly, maybe they're not human, because, you know, we all of us have weaknesses. So for me, that's a fairly easy question, and it's an easy question to answer. But I'm really looking to find out their, you know, their honesty and their awareness. Other sort of standard questions would be around scenario. So what would you do in this type of scenario? When have you had to deal with a difficult stakeholder? One question that I love answering at the or asking at the moment, and this came from a previous manager, is what feedback have you got in performance reviews that keep coming up for you? Ooh. So that sort of, you know, gives an indication of what has been a theme, and then perhaps what are you doing about that? So, for example, a theme might be, look, when, you know, Colleen, I've noticed you get really stressed at the end of the project, and when you're really stressed, you're very short with people, and you kind of get into micromanagement mode. So by me, you know, sharing that and saying, well, look, the way that I'm dealing with it is I'm aware of that I'm doing it now. I've got that feedback. And then also I'm trying to sort of, you know, pull back a bit and not add in extra meetings with my teams to check on progress. I continue to try and keep the same cadence I have with them through the lead up. So that's just an example, but it shows to me that the person's thought about the feedback they've received. They haven't just dismissed it, and they're actively working on improving themselves. So I think that to me shows growth, shows a desire to be better. And again, doesn't really matter what the answer is. It's kind of that underlying focus that I'm looking for.
That's such a good question. That would kind of catch you quite off guard, wouldn't it? But in a good way, yeah, you'd really have to be like, oh God, okay, what keeps them coming up? It's interesting what you just said then as well about the need to like control. Like I feel like I have a real tendency to do that when things start going a bit, maybe sort of like, oh, things are sort of like spiraling a bit, I'm like, right, everyone, like, you know, and I try and control everything and anything, and you know, I obsess. It's like something I've got to be really aware of. And then I can be quite short with people as well. I'm like, why is this just not getting done? Like, you just, Georgina, yep, just deep breaths.
It's very common.
Empathy, something I can continue to work on. But look, I want to sort of dive into leadership now as well, Colleen, because how many people are you managing at the moment?
At the moment, I think it's about 40.
Right. Well, I'm taking notes, okay? Because I was managing a team of four, and that was stressful enough. talk to me, like, what does your day sort of look like? Like, how, like, yeah, 40 people is a lot. So love to sort of dive into your leadership style now and what you've learned from taking on that big responsibility.
Yeah, sure. So it's a bit challenging because my team is spread over a couple of different locations and time zones as well. So that makes it hard. I think for me, it's important having the one way, same way message. So the team meetings where I bring everyone together, it's really important for me that I communicate where the project's at, where I'm at, what are the things that I'm concerned about, you know, in terms of the delivery, and then also making sure that I'm recognising and acknowledging the hard work that either individuals or the team as a whole has put in. I think, especially with these sort of projects, it's very easy to get to the state of, all right, well, we've done this, what's next, what's next, what's next, and not focusing enough on just taking a minute, you know, great work, you know, doing some level of recognition for either the individuals or the team as a whole to keep that, you know, that energy and that momentum going. I think that's really important. I think another thing for me is if, you know, if I'm feeling that there's an issue or if there's an underlying problem going on, to address that as soon as possible, because I think it's those sorts of things that can impact the culture. And if people are not talking about it, then by ignoring it doesn't make the problem go away. It can actually, you know, make it worse. And I think communication is always a key thing. So making sure that there's that consistent message, everyone's getting the same information at the same time or as much as you can, to avoid some of those, you know, the rumours or the speculation, you know, or even just the uncertainty that can come with not knowing. So I think that authenticity and being really transparent and being okay that I don't have all the answers. So, you know, if the team says, oh, well, Colleen, what's happening, you know, in this part of the project, well, you know, I don't know is sometimes my answer. You know, I could go and find out, or it's just a case of, look, we're not going to know for a couple of weeks on this one, so we're just going to have to accept that and focus on something else until we get that clarity. So those things are really important to me. Obviously, with a team that size, it's you know, hard, if not impossible, to catch up and have one-on-ones with everyone. But I try and do skip meetings where I can. So that's when I have a catch-up, not necessarily with my direct report, but with one beneath that to get their perspective. And also when I'm in the office, to make sure I'm sitting with the team, you know, walking around, hey, how you going? Have those opportunities as well. Because I think some of the challenge with working from home is you kind of lose some of that casual interaction, which is sometimes where you can get some really important statuses discussed or actually even, you know, solve big problems, you know, over the coffee machine in the morning.
100%. And you've said some really important things there as well. I think the whole like praise over punishment is so powerful. I feel like, you know, the best leaders recognize, reward good performance. And I think sometimes that's all people want. They just want a pat on the back to say, great job. You know, I think it's nice to feel that from your leader and just be like, oh, I'm being seen. I'm feeling valued. Like when I really reflect on my career, it's been the leaders that have acknowledged something that I've done, and I've got that sort of like boost of, you know, like endorphins, like, yes, I've got this. And they have noticed because I have been putting in that extra bit of work, and that goes a long, long way. I think the other thing that's really powerful as well is, you know, just sort of being present with the team, walking around, asking how they are. It's showing a genuine interest in the people that you work with as well. People feel that. They can really do feel that. One thing you also said that's really stuck with me you said at the Sisterhood social event, you said about like, if you're expecting your team to do something, you will also do it. Like, so you'll never ask your team to do something that you wouldn't do yourself. And I thought that was such a powerful message. So for example, you said, you know, if there's a deadline that we need to hit, I'm the one bringing in the pizzas, I'm the one here with them until 1 a.m, whatever we need to be to get this done. And I just thought, wow, that is so powerful. So like, can you give a few examples where like, you know, you've really had to sort of like get sort of stuck in with the team and really sort of make sure that everything gets done, but make sure that you're sort of like really driving and leading it and being that inspiration from that sort of leadership perspective?
Yeah, look, I think that's probably come up a few times just in the nature of the work that I do in terms of implementation. So I think for our implementations, generally they're overnight weekends. And I think it's important if the team are, you know, are coming in, they're in the office, to be there as well. And I'm sort of not as technical or on the systems as much as I used to be, but being there in whatever that support looks like. And yes, the pizzas is one, and that's one that always actually comes up in terms of implementation reviews. What went well, what didn't, if there's food, everyone is generally happy. If there's not, it's a common issue. But even just providing some air coverage, you know, in those type of weekends. So we've had cases where, you know, there's been incidents. Obviously, things haven't gone well. The team need to do a bit of investigation. Everyone is pretty stressed and on edge at that time. And if I can't be in there helping with the solution, I can at least be protecting the team to give them the space that they need to work and solve the problem, and doing that outward communication either back into different teams or into management, just to say, hey, team are working on it, we'll come back at this point, that point, just to stop them having to face into those conversations when they, you know, are best placed to just get on and solve the problem. So there are probably a couple of the examples where I think I can add value in that time and support the team as much as possible.
Mm. It's so important, isn't it? I think that's where the respect comes from as well. Like, you just want to know that, like, your leader's got your back, but also your leader is just, like, there with you in the grind, sort of, like, you know, just getting it done. I think that's just so powerful. The one thing that I've really sort of, I guess, struggled with my sort of leadership journey, and it is very much a journey that I'm still going on, is the whole, I guess, being nice versus being kind. And sometimes, like, I think having those candid conversations when something's just not working out, and I'll maybe like avoid it for a bit, and then it will just continue to get worse. And because I haven't addressed it, I've then got to come in quite hard. It's like, how have you gone about when you're sort of leading your team? If, like, do you just nip things in the bud quickly? Do you have those sit down conversations? Like, if someone's underperforming in your team, how do you go about dealing with that?
Yeah, look, it's a tough one, and it's probably one of the toughest ones, if I'm honest, in terms of leadership. I think you have to get in there early and set that expectation, and it can be really hard. Where I've found that the most challenging is where the individual didn't have that awareness that they've, you know, that they're either not performing or they're doing something a particular way. So I think the upfront conversation is really important. And I think what's changed in my thought process around that over the years is I'd initially thought, oh no, you know, I want to be the nice, you know, the nice manager. I feel bad. I don't want to say it. To my thinking now of, I want to set this person up for success, for their 12-month performance review. How do I set them up to be successful? And in order to do that, I need to tell them as early as possible where their opportunity is or what they're doing that doesn't align, so that it gives them as much runway as I can to actually for them to change the behavior or to do something differently. So when I reframe it, it's only in my own head, but when I reframe it in that way of I'm actually trying to help them help themselves, giving them the feedback so that they can be better, it just makes me feel that I need to be more on top of it. I need to be doing it as soon as I see it, and then continue that journey with them where I've noticed that they've improved. I've seen it change it and give them that feedback, because that's equally important. Or where they haven't quite hit the mark still, is coming back and say, hey, I noticed that, you know, nothing's really changed from my perspective in the last month. You know, what other things can you try? How else can you do it differently? Because I think when you're in that situation as that individual, you might be trying different ways to do it. So I think getting that feedback of what you're doing is either working or not working gives them again another opportunity to try something else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that perspective shift as well, because I had to go on that same journey myself of like this, I'm not setting people up for success by just ignoring this. Like I'm actually doing them a disservice. They've got to be aware of what they're doing. And like you said then, some people aren't aware, and that's unfair as well, because if you're not aware of something, you can't change it. So I think like it's the awareness piece first, making someone aware of perhaps they aren't doing something correct, or they're not, you know, living up to those expectations that the business needs. And it's just as soon as you can nip that in the bud, the easier it gets down the line, right? So it's just really, really powerful. But look, just curious, like when you sort of reflect back on like sort of stepping into a leadership role, any sort of like sort of reflections that you sort of wish you knew at the start of Colleen stepping into that role that you've now sort of, you know, really sort of, I guess, improved upon, like if you sort of reflect back on your early roles as a leader?
Yeah, look, I think the confidence is a big one for me. And I remember, you know, starting off in leadership roles, it was always that feeling of, oh, everyone is smarter than me. You know, what would I know? I've only been here for, I don't know, a year, X number of years, whatever it is. And I think the, you know, if I could go back, all the learning that I give to other women I've seen in my team with that same sort of struggle is don't underestimate yourself. You know, I'll often say to them, you probably know more than 90% of people in the room about this particular topic. So, you know, use that, ask questions, make sure you've got a voice at the table, and don't feel that because you haven't been there long, or because, I don't know, you female versus male, or because you haven't come from this background, don't let any of those so-called blockers in your own mind stop you. And I think the other thing that comes with that is the language that we use. And I'll often see perhaps, and you know, I think both men and women can do it, but that the language of how they start the conversation of, oh, look, I may not be on the right track, but, or I'm sure you've already thought about it, but, you know, some of that sort of language, which is not setting you up for people to take note and listen. So think about how you're phrasing that. I've got this really great idea that I think would help us in this situation. Or I've had an experience in the past which I think will be beneficial for us on this. So thinking about the words that are using and how that's setting you up for the part of the conversation that comes next, because I've seen women do that in meetings where they've said, oh, look, you know, I don't think this is maybe a great idea, but here's my idea. And then there'll be perhaps some clever, you know, smart people in the room that hear that idea and think, oh, let me rebrand that as my idea. And then, you know, 10 minutes later, they're bringing up the same idea that you've had. So think about the preamble that goes before what you're actually going to say.
That's so important. You've just touched upon something that I've done myself, and I know a lot of, I'm going to say, women have done, and then they've got frustrated when you, like, say someone else, oh, hang on a minute, that's what I said, but it's not what you said. Yep. You didn't say it. You meant to say it, but you didn't say it. And I think this is where we all need to sort of like be very aware of like how we're pitching, speaking, and I said this recently as well. Language is fascinating to me. The words we speak, it is a representation of what we're thinking and feeling about ourselves. And you're so right. If we're shy, if we're timid, if we're, oh, maybe this would work. It's like, no, you've got to speak with authority. Own it. If you've got an idea, own it and speak it into being, because that is how you're going to command people's attention. And as women, because we are working, especially in tech, in very male dominated environments, we do need to speak up. We do need to get our voice heard. And that's where I see so many females especially fall short. And I want to stop that, Colleen. I don't like the fact that, you know, women aren't speaking up, but they, you know, they've got some amazing ideas, and it's why I do what I do. But I do want to sort of talk upon like just the whole like working in a male dominated environment and you've been at NAB now for 14 years. I'm sure you've been in boardrooms with mostly men. What's your experience been like dealing with that? I'm sure there's been some incredible men that sponsored you and helped you along your way. But when you're in these situations where maybe you are the sole female or one of a couple, how do you deal with that? How do you prepare yourself for that?
Yeah, look, I think that can be really challenging. And I've certainly had that. I used to work in logistics for a number of years before I was in finance. And that's... even then it was very male dominated, and it was perhaps at that point not as professional as some of the other industries. So it was challenging. And, you know, sometimes you do get that whole, you know, don't worry, doll, or don't worry, love, you know, she'll be right type of attitude. And I think that's where that language and that professionalism comes down and needs to be relied upon. I've seen where it hasn't worked, where, you know, where the female has sort of perhaps, you know, gone to that level as well and sort of, you know, gone into perhaps language that is not, you know, perhaps as corporate as it could be. And, you know, thinking to that level generally doesn't end well. It only goes in one direction. So I think keeping the language and the professionalism up, I think finding your sponsors in that room is critical. So, you know, understanding, you know, the different players and this is feedback for any situation really, but understanding the different people, what their drivers are, what motivates them, and what alliances you know, you want to foster. Because I think when you're presenting an idea, male or female, is, you know, you need to have those sponsors, and you need to have other people that will help you on that journey. So a lot of that, I think, for me comes down to the work you do before. So, for example, if you're in a room presenting an idea with you know, 10 other people, before you get to that meeting, you know, who's going to support you and who's not, and what catch-ups and sessions do you need to have before you walk into the room to work out where those alliances are? Because if you're trying to convince 10 people that your idea is great, that's a hard slog. It's certainly doable, but it's a hard slog, as opposed to having some catch-ups before the meeting to find out, all right, well, actually, I've got 5 people, you know, that I know that will support me, and I know 2 won't, and the rest I haven't worked out. But then instead of it just being your voice and your perspective coming across, you've got your 5 other supporters there as well that can give their perspective from their backgrounds and their experience, which just really can help present that case, and then perhaps help with the 2 naysayers in getting those across the line. So not specifically male or female, but I think understanding your stakeholder group and where your supporters are is critical.
Yeah, I completely agree. That's such powerful advice, and one to absolutely start executing if people are listening to this right now, like, well, who would my sponsor be? Because you will have them. You know, you absolutely will. They will be in the organization. So make sure you find them and set yourself up for success there, because that's absolutely key. I want to sort of move on to Colleen. I can't possibly have you on and not talk about future of tech, future of work, and where you sort of foresee that all going. So there's so much talk going on in the world right now of, like, you know, AI taking jobs, or versus AI making us more productive versus, like, there's a lot going on. But what are your predictions? What do you think we're going to see over the next couple of years, 5 years? Like, what are you sort of, like, interested in? What's sort of maybe scaring you a little? Like, where's your head at with it all?
Yeah, look, I think AI is going to play a big role. I think it's going to be more focused on those time-intensive, repetitive type actions. And I think there's still a lot of work underway to validate that and to make sure that there's the appropriate decision-making, you know, tools around it. But I don't think it can work in isolation. I think you still need us humans, you know, in there in the mix to you know, to verify, to understand it, and also to provide that, that, you know, strategy and that thinking behind what is the business value of what we're doing. And I think there's a lot of attraction to AI, and it can do this and it can do that. And there are lots of use cases for it, but you still need to understand, well, what is the business value? What is the return on this investment? How do I make sure, you know, I'm managing the risk around it, and that there's, you know, there's human in those areas of, you know, of critical decision making. So I think we are going to see a lot more in the AI space. And I think some of the roles around it are going to need to change to support it and to help provide that framework and that control, especially, you know, in finance, making sure we've got the, you know, the risk controls in place is critical. So, you know, I don't think we're disappearing anytime soon.
I hope not. I really hope not. But yeah, I think we've just got to embrace it. We've got to start using it. We can't be afraid of it. It's coming. It's going to be a big part of our lives. And whether we like that or not, it is here and it's here to stay. And it's just, how do we integrate that into our lives? Like, something that came up at a recent event we did was all about like prompt engineering and getting really good at like how we can prompt AI and things, which is something that I probably will even like take a course myself and just learn a bit more about that. Because I'm curious. I think this is going to be key, this word curiosity. It's not like having this fixed mindset of like, that's not gonna, I don't want to know about that, that's too hard baskets. I don't think we can afford to have that thought process. I think we need to have a curious, open mindset to be like, this is here, it's coming, what can it teach me, how can I integrate this into my life? And I think if we have that approach to this technology, you know, we'll end up using it to our advantage as opposed to being used by it. That's my thought process of it. I'm excited by it, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
Do you use it like day to day? Are you using it day to day in your like life? Is it sort of like having a positive impact on what you do?
Yeah. We use it a little bit at work. There's obviously on Zoom, so you know it can take minutes for you and some of those sorts of things. So. You know, there's applications underway in terms of assessing home loans and those sorts of things. So there's lots of trials or experiments going on, and I think that curiosity is critical, as you said. It's not going away. And again, you know, looking for roles, having people that are curious and interested in, you know, either AI or, you know, anything really, it just shows a level of energy and passion that is, you know, that's the type of person that you want in your team, someone that can, you know, look at new things and get excited about what's coming up.
Mm. There you go. My next career could be a prompt engineer. I could come and work for you, Colleen. But listen, thank you so much for coming on today. Like, is there any sort of thing that we haven't touched upon today? Like, you know, whether it's a leadership, whether it's a mindset and a confidence piece that you think is worth just sort of leaving the audience with before I ask you the final question?
Yeah, look, I think it's about keep learning, keep evolving. I think the minute that we stop and we get comfortable and we think, oh, well, we're in a cushy job, or we, you know, we don't have to, you know, try as hard because we've, you know, we've done our degree or our master's, whatever it is. I think that's when we're in danger. I think constantly in improving, constantly learning, and there's lots of different forms of that, either informal or formal qualifications. But I think that learning and evolving, I think, is really important, because we are in a time where there's, you know, there's no guarantees on, you know, on our job, on, you know, the industry and where things are going. But I think if you've got that interest and that drive to keep improving yourself, I think that can go a long way in setting yourself up for change, you know, when it happens, not if it happens.
100%. How can you offer more value to your industry, your place of work, your colleagues, your team? Like that's a key piece to ask yourself. Like I ask it to myself every day. How can I offer more value to the marketplace? How can I offer more value to our clients, our candidates, and really improve that whole experience? And I do think that technology is a massive enabler of that. And hopefully will free up more of my time to do the things that I'm really good at, which is building a relationship with candidates, building a relationship with clients. Like, you know, once people are in process for interviews, that's where I sort of really enjoy because I get to sort of like speak and obviously like build that rapport and those sort of negotiations as well. But what's next for you, Colleen? You've had a very fruitful career. You've been at NAV for 14 years. Like, what are you working on right now? What's sort of next for yourself in the next steps for you?
Yeah, so I think for me, I'm probably start having a, you know, I've got a 2 weeks break over Christmas, having a bit of a reset and sort of thinking about what I want to do next. What's the driver? I think I'm really enjoying the speaking at the moment. I've been speaking at a few events, so really sort of keen to think about how do I progress that further? How do I one, make sure I've got the knowledge and the breadth to talk to different things, but having that connection and you know, developing my skills in that area that can help, you know, in my career at NAB, but also to help other individuals that are on their, you know, various stages of their journey.
Amazing. Well, we've been very grateful to have you at one of our events, and I can say that anyone looking for an event speaker, go and book Colleen.
Thank you, Georgie.
No, I'm serious. But where can people connect with you? Where do you hang out the most? I'm guessing LinkedIn is where you'll sort of be.
LinkedIn. Yeah. Yes. I'm usually in the city. 3 days a week. So that's where you'll find me. But yeah, LinkedIn is probably the best way to catch me any day, really.
The woman with all the pizza boxes coming in for the team.
That's it.
Colleen, thank you so much. I really appreciate you.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's been wonderful having you on the podcast. So thank you. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. If you've got this far, that honestly means the world to me and lets me know that you've got a lot of value from today's episode. So if I could just ask you to do one thing, pull out your phone and please leave a quick review. It honestly would mean the world to me. It will help this podcast grow and get our message out there to more people. So if you could do that for me, that would be amazing. And please reach out and just let me know what you want to hear more about, what you're interested in. It will just also help me make sure that I'm continuing to speak to topics that are relevant and also find guests that are real true experts in what you want to know more about. So have an amazing day. Thanks so much for doing that. And I can't wait to share the next episode with you. Thank you.